What's up, everybody? Metal Dave, along with my co-host Jason McMaster, bringing you another episode of the Talk Louder podcast. Today, we are joined by one of my favorites, guitar hero Tracy Guns from LA Guns is with us again. He's been on the show at least twice before. I think this is his third time, and we always have a great time talking to him. He's here today to talk about the new LA Guns record, Leopard Skin. It is out now as you're watching or listening to this podcast. It came out April 4th, so it's available now. A couple singles are out currently. Taste It and Lucky Motherfucker already out. You can hear those songs and videos on YouTube, etc. The band is gearing up for a tour. I know they're in Texas in May, and then they go out and do a number of dates with Tom Kiefer. That's always a great pairing. So, yeah, a lot of great catching up today with Tracy. Always a pleasure to talk to him. And we got some insight into the making of the new album, Leopard Skin. An album that Tracy admits is a bit of a departure for LA Guns. There's a lot of 70s rock elements in the music, some funk, some boogie, some soul, some James Brown. As he said, and as I said, it's probably the least metallic LA Guns record to come out, but it does showcase the band's collective appreciation for 70s music, especially bands like the James Gang, Rolling Stones, and we touched on James Brown. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but somehow it goes together and it works, and I'm really enjoying it. So.
Well, Tracy's, we talk about this, but he's a classic rock guy, you know, he's a Led Zeppelin guy, and man, you know, people forget Led Zeppelin is a funk, they're funky. It's not just about goblins and J.R. Tolkien shit and hippie shit and, you know, going to California, and flowers in your hair. It's, you know, they're a funk. They're a heavy funk band. It's crazy. And so, you know, I knew that about Tracy, and I've known it for a long time. But to finally hear that that is where the direction that he sort of like stumbled, because as prolific as LA Guns is, they have a lot of fucking records out now. It's crazy how prolific they are. So to not make, and I say this loosely, I don't mean this, to not make, or to make certain you don't just make it the same record again, right?
Right, right.
You are at liberty to stumble or fall whatever direction you want. It's like blindfold and throw the dart. And we also talk about this, that his muse seems to be Adam Hamilton.
Who is
the engineer and ends up, you know, is the longtime writing partner of Tracy Guns now. So,
and drummer.
Plays drums on the last two or three records, I believe now. And then they have Sean Duncan jump on the tour bus to drum live. And he's a fucking cool dude, too. So they've got their shit together. Very enjoyable writing team and process, and they can write any kind of fucking song they want. And I'm just kind of jealous. You know what I mean? That they can it just happens. I mean, you know, once they unstick, once they push the car out of the mud, it's going 100 miles an hour, and it's fucking great.
I think they're at a point now where they're free to do whatever the hell they want, and they're enjoying it, and you can tell that they're having fun with it. They don't have to cater to being in the box that LA Guns may.
Right. Even if someone's going, well, you know, who loves the first two, three records, whatever, and they go, they hear something off the new record, and they're like, this is LA Gun, you know, like, what the hell is this, you know, or whatever reaction they're going to get. Wow, this is really good. What is this? It's LA Guns. No, it's not. You see what I'm trying to say? It's this, like, they hate it before they know what it is, or the opposite, right? Or they love it because, you know, like, wow, this is LA Guns. Wow. You know, it's a reactionary, depending on who it is you're talking about.
Yeah, the point being, it can't be pigeonholed. And I think they're at a point where they've earned it and they're having fun with it. You know, one question I didn't get to ask him is, this is the first record on Cleopatra, on the Cleopatra label.
Deadline, yeah.
Their previous four, I believe, were on Frontiers. And I was interested in knowing why the switch, and I never did get around to that question. So,
you know, that kind of stuff happens all the time. Maybe their deal ran out. Maybe it was a grass is greener over here, or, hey, let's work with someone who's in our backyard, or, you know, we're in a right place at the right time to do this for this guy, or, you know, a promise was made later on, or sometimes it's just easier to do, you know, one of the above, multiple choice I just laid out could be a reason why. And then there may be as simple as, why not? These are friends of ours at Deadline. Let's do that. Let's do it with them this time, you know?
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe when this episode comes out, Tracy will hit us back in the comments or something, but
yeah,
it's really inconsequential. It's just an interesting point, because they've been on a roll with Frontier since Tracy and Phil reunited, and now they're on Cleopatra. But whatever, who cares? We still have a new LA Guns record out of it. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters. They're still going strong, about to go on tour. They're still great live. If you haven't seen them live in recent years, man, they are a solid kick-ass rock and roll band.
Yeah, and I mean this with love. For a bunch of old dudes, they're fucking a bulldozer live.
Yeah, they sure are, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure to have him on the show here today to talk about the LA Guns' latest record, Leopard Skin. Tracy Guns today on the Talk Louder podcast. Johnny, Johnny, Johnny. What's up, Tracy?
I'm going to smoke. Everybody's got to die of something. So.
Okay, cool.
Go ahead. Knock yourself out. How you been?
I was just doing the another podcast, and I'm going to hop back on with them when we're done. They're such cool guys. It's the I'll tell you, you guys know these guys. I feel so impersonal not knowing everybody's names of their podcast. Let's see here.
Don't sweat it, man.
No, it's just, I know everybody, and it's just like, but I can't even remember my kids' names. you know, you're All Things Blues and Southern Rock podcast. I was on with those guys.
Oh, yeah. I was on with them 2 years ago in Nashville at the Rockin' Pod. Yeah, that guy was cool.
Yeah, it's two guys. It's, Brian and Jason, and they're super cool. And this is the first time I've done anything with them, so you know they got a lot of questions. They want to know why I have children.
Yeah. Wow.
Why you have children? No, I'm kidding.
That's a no.
Well, speaking of children, we interrupted your podcast, and we are currently interrupting my son's jam session because he's upstairs with his buddies. He's got bass player and a guitar player over here, and they were really sounding good. And I was like, guys,
let us live our dream right now.
Yeah.
Shut up there.
We'll get everybody back to their other business as soon as possible. But, man, thanks for doing this, Tracy. It's always good to see you.
Oh, I always look forward to talking to both you guys, man.
Jason,
Tim Heine's our manager, and I keep begging him to get Dangerous Toys on shows. And he's like, well, it's hard. You know, one guy's there, and then they want money. And I'm like, we'll make it happen. I'm trying. I'm always trying to get Dangerous Toys out with us.
Well, we'd love to do, like, you know, just like break the camel's back and take a hit on a couple shows, at least try to do a few or a week with you guys.
Yeah, you know, I'm always like, hey, you know, he's like, I love those guys. I love those guys, you know. So, you know,
we'll
make it happen somehow.
You know, it's still talked about, you know, 30 years later, that Cocked and Loaded tour debut Dangerous Toys thing. That was with Tora Tora. That was the shit. It was the shit. It was fucking great.
You know, I think about it like this, you know, all you guys live in the South. So, I mean, you know, why can't we just do, you know, Texas and Oklahoma and, you know, like,
oh yeah, and you can do you can do with Tora. You could do a week in Texas by itself.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well,
anyway, we can fantasize again later. Yeah,
you've got LA Guns has a new album called Leopard Skin. Comes out is it April 4th. Okay.
Yeah.
I got an advanced copy of it, so I was just been listening to it the past couple of days, and I feel like this is the last time we talked to you. I think you were doing, you were promoting the Blackbird Angels record.
Okay.
And we had some discussion there about a lot of your 70s influence being very prominent. And I feel like this is a step in that same direction. I feel, I hear a lot of 70s, influence. I hear a lot of Zeppelin. I hear a lot of Aerosmith. I even hear elements of funk music. I'd say it's like the least metal album of the LA Guns recent output. Is that fair?
It's totally fair. There's no metal on it.
Yeah.
I think you definitely nailed that. I think it was just time to come up for a breather. You know, we have a tendency to get so heavy, and then the records that follow, I try to sprinkle some rock and roll around the heavy. And then we write ballads that are fucking dark and depressing, you know? And, you know, so it was conscious. You know, I was in a really good mood when I started, you know, putting this music together. And I was listening to a lot of up-tempo, upbeat, happier music, you know? And it is disco and R&B and Beastie Boys and fucking James Gang, you know, like all that fun 70s stuff. And then, you know, I got the Deadline from, that's funny, Deadline from Cleopatra. They have a label called Deadline.
Deadline,
right,
yeah.
Right.
But I got the Deadline, you know, to turn in the record, and it was like 3 months. And that's always when I go, you know, as soon as I get that deadline, and it's always terrifying, you know, like, you know, what am I going to do? And so I sat in front of the tape machine, you know, for a couple hours, terrified, like, what the fuck am I doing, you know? And I don't know what the first tune was. I don't even know. But something came out. I sent it to Adam Hamilton, and he played drums, sent it back, and we were off to the races. You know, when that dialogue starts with Adam, I think is when the creativity starts coming, because, you know, he's such a cheerleader.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, man, you know, like, fuck yeah, you know. Do that again this way, and it'll be even better. Like, yeah. Okay, yeah, it'll, yeah, you know, and you know, we get all the way through it, you know, and we let the guys hear it along the way. So, you know, hopefully, we get good feedback from them and let us know that we're going in a direction that works for everybody. We want everybody to be super happy with what we're doing, and. It was interesting, you know, when everything was kind of said and done, Phil and I got on the phone talking about the album title. You know, we couldn't think of one. You know, I mean, we just couldn't, you know, we decided we didn't want something too clever. We decided we didn't want anything epic, you know, we just like, you know, but we couldn't call it the White Album or the Black Album or the Purple Record, you know. And, you know, I was like, man, Leopard Skin, dude. And he did not like it.
Oh, really?
He's like,
who didn't, you know, like it?
Phil, at first, you know, he was just kind of like, oh, I thought we were trying to be edgy, you know? And I go, well, what's not edgy about Leopard Skin? Keith Richards and stuff. And you know, and he was like, yeah. I go, trust me. He goes, well, of course I trust you. You know, he goes, go for it, you know? And then now it's just turned into this really fun thing.
Yeah.
And I think it represents the music, you know? It's like, very fun rock and roll, swing, soulful.
Yeah. I like the title, because when I think of Leopard Skin, I think of leopard print. So I think of Keith Richards, and I think of all the punk rockers and the leopard print creepers and all that, you know.
Yeah.
edgy punk rock kind of stuff.
It goes a long way. I think of like the upholstery on antique furniture in a basement in a speakeasy in New York City.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, get off this chat.
What, are you going to pick up the couch? He's going to carry an antique chair all the way over to the camera. He is.
There you go. It is.
See? This was Adam Hamilton's grandmother's.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That looks like a piano bench.
So it is.
Looks like a piano bench.
It is, but it's real low.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. A little ottoman, but
love that kind of stuff.
That's our childhood, isn't it? It's our grandparents. Yeah.
Well, isn't it funny that it's your that generational thing, which sort of come full circle, lends itself to, you know, the old R&B and funk and Stones and Motown and the groove. And it sounds like that's what you're trying to do. I've not heard the record yet, so I don't know. But the way that you describe it is like, title works.
It's a Jason McMaster record for sure.
Bring me some.
I didn't send it to you.
If you did, I missed the email. When it comes on vinyl, that's when I'm listening. If it comes in an email, I may or may.
Oh, beautiful. I love the cover by the way.
Tracy, my address is.
I love the cover because you still incorporate the classic shield, but it's not the dominant piece of artwork, the girl and the leopard print, the leather jacket. I thought that was really cool too, kind of.
Kayla did that, Phil's wife, you know, she hand paints all the album covers, you know, so. Nobody knows sexy better than a sexy woman.
Far out.
Nice.
Well, hey, listen, you know, when people, I know you're a Zeppelin guy and you could talk about Zeppelin forever, but without going down that total rabbit hole, when I think of Zeppelin, I think of funk. I don't think of, J.R. Tolkien immediately, but I do because they're like a proto metal band, but they're funky.
I think the same about James Brown. They totally love
James Brown. And that's what the Stones and Zeppelin had in common. They weren't the same. Oh yeah, totally.
Aerosmith too. I get tons of funk out of Aerosmith.
And everybody loves
James Gang. Yeah.
James Brown. They love James Brown.
Yeah. But the one thing that's really in common is James Gang and Led Zeppelin, right?
Like, oh yeah.
You know, Page loved Joe Walsh so much he bought his Les Paul for $500 and made it the most famous guitar in history. But it was because of the way James Gang improvised live, you know, with a lot of swing and a lot of, you know, that early funk rock and roll attitude. Yeah. And Zeppelin certainly has all of that. You know, but it really stems, I think, from, you know, the obvious ones, but also Joe Walsh and James Gang. And it's fascinating to watch, you know, because there's so many great videos of both those bands early in their careers. Like, We're Gonna Groove by Zeppelin. Jesus Christ. Wow.
Yeah.
One of the first things they ever recorded. They never really put it on a record. But, it swings so hard. It's like, wow. You know, I love that stuff. And L.A. Guns, we do it, but we do it rarely. And so this record, I wanted to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's all over this record. My favorite song so far is Hit and Run.
That's the band's collective favorite song.
Really? That's interesting because it's weird. I can't put my finger on it, but I hear something in there that's kind of a departure from everything we just talked about. To me, it's the song that kind of, it almost has, I want to place it in a time period like the alternative music of the 90s, but I don't mean Nirvana or Pearl Jam. I mean, like, I'm thinking like the Smithereens or Soul Asylum or that band The Church or there's something there.
Maybe The Church. You know what it really is it's a blend of like Chris Isaak.
Chris Isaak, yes.
And like maybe a little Cult. a little bit of Cure.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some heavy ass guitars, and then Phil Lewis singing British, right? Because he's singing British in that song. And that's Johnny Martin's tune. He brought in the music.
Wow. Johnny.
And we sat here, and he heard it, you know, kind of more straight ahead. It is straight ahead, but more Marshall sounding guitars, you know. And I immediately just heard Gretsch, you know, tremolo, reverb.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of whammy bar. And he was like, yes, yes, yes. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that. So he took off, and I built all the guitars around it. And then there is a Marshall Les Paul track where the chorus comes in. And but just as an overall song, it's a great song, man.
It really
is. You know what I mean? It's like all the other songs are great, but they're very specific kind of, you know, time capsule type things. But that one is really like kind of, I would put it in the same, you know, category as Let You Down by LA Guns, which was a ballad a couple albums ago, where this is more up-tempo, but it has that dreamy kind of goth thing about it. And that's the band's favorite. My favorite song is The Grinder.
So The Grinder, to me, when I listened to that, and I wanted to talk about Adam Hamilton, but man, did he take a page right out of the Bill Ward playbook.
Woo! Yeah, he did.
The drums on that song are right out of classic Black Sabbath. It sounds awesome.
It's so powerful, man.
Yeah.
And that song started out as chords, and then I did a slide track, and then I erased all the chord tracks, and I just doubled and tripled the slide. And it just sounds so swampy.
Yeah.
Especially with those crazy drums, you know? It's just like, and Phil is singing at the top of his register, and it's just, God damn, man. Like, you know, we make records for ourselves so we can get excited about it, you know?
Yeah. I love the drums really stand out on that track to me because they're just pounding and they're busy, but they're not overplayed. It's classic Bill Ward. It sounds great.
Well, Adam's a little king, you know. Adam is a little king. Like, you know, when he means business, you know, when we're writing and recording, like he's that 15-year-old kid, man, that's just like, I'm doing this, it's going to be perfect and it's going to sound perfect, and you know, look at me. And it's I'm always blown away, man. Even when we're just, you know, going through the grind of like, you know, hey, I need a drum track, you know, that first drum track they'll send me is always like up to here. I'm just like,
shoot. Yeah, you know?
it's inspiring to take things that I write and then redo them over his drums, you know. It's like, wow.
It's Why nice when your team has someone like Adam that you call him the cheerleader, because it would be a little, I'm not going to throw stones, but it's, I mean, imagine it without Adam being there going, dude, do that again. Oh, you know, the whole, like you explained, and I can fucking hear Adam doing that and saying it on the phone, on a message or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of put fire under your ass to finish the record.
Well, to do a lot of things. It's like Shane was that way too, you know, the guy that was playing with us when we started. You know, he's the real champion of the group, you know, whatever group we're talking about. Mm. He was the cheerleader. He was the engine. He was the fire. You know what I mean? The forever helpful, the forever, you know, making sure things work and things get done and organizing and things like that. And Adam, though, I've known for, I don't know, man, a long time now, like 25 years or something. We've been working together because he played drums on the first Brides of Destruction demo.
And
he recorded that demo. So, I mean, he's been doing this for a long time. And, you know, we've always had this, you know, kind of muse-like relationship where when we write together, it's next level special. We feel it is, you know, and it's always inspiring.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because you've done this before where Adam plays drums on the album but is not in the touring band, and I was you just answered the question basically, but I was wondering how that works with, you know, in this case, Sean, is he cool with, you know, kind of just jumping in and hitting the road with you guys and letting the studio stuff go to Adam, or what's the dynamic there? Cause you do always, it seems like you've had Adam play drums, if not on full records, at least tracks on the records.
Oh, he's only played on full albums. You know, I mean, he's done the last three albums, Blackbird Angels, the two Sunbomb records, you know, he's my guy. And Sean knows the chemistry that Adam and I have, that, you know, that it's more than him just playing drums. You know, he's my writing partner.
Yeah.
And also he's the recording engineer of the drums, and we mix together. So Sean doesn't have a problem. And the thing, it'd be amazing to do an album with Sean, but that means we go to a rehearsal studio and we write songs together and pull Phil in from Vegas and Ace in from, you know, Nashville. It's a whole different thing, which sounds like a good time, but it sounds really expensive.
Yeah.
And you know,
You just made my head hurt by going over the national globe, you know.
It's a logistics thing, right? It's logistical.
I mean, in that case it would be logistical, but the fact that what we do with Adam beyond works, you know, I'm not going to fuck with it.
Right. Yeah.
This is how we do it. You know, and the same with Phil, you know. He writes with Mitch Davis in New York and he flies to New York to record those lyrics and vocals and tracks with Mitch Davis, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people involved in making sure these records are the best they can be.
My other favorite song on the record is The Masquerade.
Oh man, Angie.
Yeah, there you go. Because it's a classic L.A. Guns ballad, but maybe not a classic. You alluded to Let You Down. Right. And there's something about the ballads in recent years that, as you said, are kind of dark and a little gothy. And, you know, they really have a vibe. And this is another one of those, I think. I love it. It's my other favorite song on the record.
When I got the vocals back for that song, I couldn't stop listening to it for at least 3 or 4 days. It was just on repeat. You know, it's just like, it's so suicidal, man.
Exactly. Yeah. You
know, which just scratches an itch. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're a musician and you know, you love scratching all the itches, and that one really does. LA Guns ballads, you know, our biggest ballad is Ballad of Jane. It says ballad in the title.
Right.
But the difference between that and all the other ones is that's in a major key. So in theory, it's a happier sounding ballad, right?
Yeah.
But all the other ones are minor keys, and they're like One Way Ticket to Love off the first LA Guns record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are true LA Guns ballads. Not saying Ballad of Jane isn't, because it gave us the authority to continue,
sure.
all these years to write all this other stuff. But The Masquerade is like, yeah, man. Mm.
Yeah, good. It's good. And, you know, you brought up Phil earlier, and I think his voice lends a much needed quality to that style of ballad. There's something about his voice. Like, you could feel the pain in his voice, and that goes with the music that you're describing. It wouldn't be the same without that voice singing that song.
Yeah, when I hear Phil sing these types of songs, I want to call him and go, "Who hurt you, man?
Yeah, you need a hug."
Yeah, you know, because he's so fucking good at it, and you know, and I guess, you know, a lot of times, a lot of the singers are like Geddy Lee, for example, you know. He had this tendency to get really melancholy. But you see an interview with him and he's not a melancholy guy, but there's something in there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that comes out in the voice, you know, and you can't hide your voice.
I didn't take you for a hardcore Rush fan. Maybe you are, or you're not.
Yeah. Oh,
wow, far off.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the first thing you and I ever talked about in the parking lot of the back.
Okay.
It was Rush.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember shit.
Well, also the fact that you love 70s and classic and that kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's undeniable it's hard to miss what Rush did in the 70s. I mean, all before moving pictures, the things that they were doing.
Exactly.
And the rule breaking they were doing and the things they were lifting from The Who and Led Zeppelin and shit like that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I think Getty really, really wanted to be like an angry plant meets, Getty Lee is an angry Robert Plant shaking hands with Daltrey.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
And a little Ozzy in there. You kind of think about it. Yeah, it's crazy what Getty was doing. But to talk about his melancholy, like, voice, I'm not talking about a tonal vocal style. I'm talking about the voice that you don't realize when you're watching and or listening to an interview with Getty, because he likes the Three Stooges and he likes to make jokes and he's funny and campy and stuff. And when you think about some of the songs he's written, he's melancholy. He's balladeering even sometimes.
But that's the balance, you know, because the greatest comedians are the most depressed people.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So
wow.
People have a lot of balance in their personality. And, you know, you don't always get what you see. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, you think you know somebody, and then they go home, you know, and then they're thinking about something else and they're not being funny and they're, you know, dealing with whatever they're dealing with. And that's why art is so expressive, because it really lets out the inside of somebody. Mm. And then you go see them talk, and they're not so much that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, they're like, he has a funny motherfucker. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, I bet Robert Smith is the funniest guy in the world if you sat at lunch with him.
Wow.
And then I didn't know that he's been married to the same woman, you know, for all these years, like since he's 17 or something, he's been with the same woman, and he's writing all these depressing songs about relationships. I'm like, where the fuck did that come from, man? You've been your whole life.
It's the art form, right? It's the
art form.
Yeah.
Well, it's the healer, isn't it? Because you get to talk about all the dark corners of your, you know, inside your mind's eye that no one sees except for you. So the way to get it out is music and art. And, you know, James Hetfield says this really, he said this really great thing, and I use it all the time. I'm not going to say that I came up with it. He said when he was learning guitar and, you know, writing his earliest songs, even though they were just about headbanging and fighting and thrashing, it gave him a voice he didn't have, because he's this shy kid from Downey, you know?
You know, I think James Hetfield has ended up being the bravest man in rock.
I could talk about that for an hour.
Yeah, because I've known James musically and personally from a distance. But when we see each other, it's like, whoa, what's up, bro? Right?
Yeah.
Like, we're not good friends.
Yep.
But we respect each other, and they came to the very first LA Guns release party here. Like, you know, like, those guys have been around LA Guns. And I always liked Metallica. And, you know, we had a weird exchange once in New York when Cocked and Loaded was coming out and the Black Album was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we ended up alone at the Scrap Bar in New York. It was like a Tuesday night. And there was nothing else to do. We were both there doing press. He was doing press for his album. And I came in, and he was the only person in there, and the bartender. So I went, hey, man. He goes, Tracy Guns. And right away, I knew he was wasted. I knew he was gone.
Yep.
I knew he was off his tree. And I go, I have a cassette of your new album. He's like, you don't like Metallica. I go, yeah, I do. You know, this is a fucking great record. He goes, well, I got the Contraband record, Mikkel Schnickner. he goes, fucking great playing, but those songs are shit, bro.
Oh.
I'm like, yeah, cool, man, you know, whatever. And he just started getting kind of amped up. I'm like, I'm going to talk to you later. Where are you going? I go, well, I'm not going to sit here and just listen to you be mad at me. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at you. I go, you sure sound like you're mad at me. He goes, whatever. Right. He was just drunk. I left. So, yeah. You know, years go by. I see him every now and then. I saw him at Download Festival when Lars didn't show up. And we talked for a few minutes. And I saw Kurt, you know. And, you know, always been this cool kind of vibe between me and those guys. But then I saw that he opened up his heart in public, you know. Mm-hmm. And he started talking about the demons that he's dealt with and how long, you know, how, you know, you go play stadiums and you go to the grocery store in your neighborhood, you know, it's a big shift, right?
Yeah.
And you know how he used to deal with things, but it is very difficult for a man to talk about those things with his friends, let alone talk about that sincerely in public, especially being the singer of fucking Metallica.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I have so much even more respect for James now than ever. I just think he's so bold and so brave. Although I think it's a shame what happened to his relationship, you know, relationships don't last forever, but I really got to give him massive kudos, man. You know, just like way to go, dude. And that healing process, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, he's a millionaire. You know, who feels sorry for a millionaire? It's like, dude,
yeah.
What does that got to do with money? Doesn't solve everything internally. You know?
He's not thinking, we're not talking about money.
Yeah.
He's not talking about money when he's telling you that his heart is fucked up, that his head is this, and he's got demons and
And that he's normal.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know, it's like coming right out of the tree and going, I'm just one of y'all.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? Exactly. I love it. And he got sober. And
that's important.
That's tough. That's hard shit to do, man. And on top of it, he wrote all that great music and those songs. And it was like, you know, I don't say this very often, but God bless that fucking dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we could all agree to that. I mean, yeah, you're right. He had to bare his soul in the most public of ways, on the biggest of stages, in front of the most macho audience. That's not an easy thing to do, you know.
What a badass!
Elton John. Did you see the Elton John thing that they did when Elton was voted into the?
That was great.
I don't know. It's some kind of like art songwriter society in England or whatever it was. He was given all these kudos and awards. It was like Elton John Day, and they had all these bands learn Elton songs. And okay. Did you see that shit?
I didn't see it.
It's on YouTube. Anyway, they covered Love Lies Bleeding, Metallica.
Wow.
And they're playing Love Lies Bleeding, and Elton and Bernie Taupin are in the front row just going, and everyone gets up and starts dancing, and Metallica's playing Love Lies Bleeding, and it's fucking amazing.
Insane. I'm going to watch it when we're done. That's not like, how do I miss this shit?
Isn't that the same broadcast where Elton then had a bunch of kind words for Metallica, and Hetfield actually teared up on camera?
That might have been Howard Stern.
Oh, that's what it
was.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
before the Elton John Award. I'm mad at myself that I can't remember because I'm a Elton John nerd. Yeah. But
Tracy can just Google it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Tracy, I want to send you my Elton ripoff songs I've been writing. Yeah,
send it to me, man.
Yeah, I want you to hear it.
I bet it's awesome.
Tell me a little bit about...
Let's get back on track. Leopard Skin.
Let's go back to Leopard Skin. I wanted to ask you specifically about I'm Your Candyman and Runaway Train, because on an album that I think is a bit of a departure for LA Guns, I think you admitted that yourself, those two songs especially are really not what we're accustomed to hearing. Like Runaway Train, I hear like a country western stomp, and I'm Your Candyman, I just hear this real slinky kind of, I don't know, but and Phil's voice again kind of makes that song. So just tell me a little bit about the creation of those two tracks.
Well, first of all, that's Phil wants to play Candyman live.
Really?
And I'm like, well, you know, all the tunes to play live, I don't know if that's the one, but he loves that song. That one came from a drum groove. Adam just had that groove, and he sent me like 4 minutes of the groove. And he goes, I don't know what to do with this one, but I'm sure you'll come up with something, you know? And it, to me, it has this kind of, I don't know what song it is, but this kind of Van Halen kind of like maybe the fourth album, something on there has that kind of, you know, kind of thing. So I just figured, let me play something Hendrix-y over it to see what, you know, how that goes. And I came up with that riff. And then the heavy riff, you know, and I was like, I don't know what kind of music this is, you know, but this is really fucking cool. And then it wasn't really a thing until the vocals and you know, lyrics were recorded, you know, and I was like, ah, man, this is just pimp music.
That's it. That's exactly it.
This song should be the soundtrack in every pimp music movie ever made.
Nailed it. You nailed it. That's
it's
exactly
so greasy.
Yes. Yes.
Greasy. So that's how that one came out. It was just like totally came from the sky, kind of thinking of like, you know, something Hendrix-y, but it just worked out that way. And then it ended up being Phil's kind of, you know, closet case favorite song. And then the other one, Runaway Train, that's the most talked about song. It's that TV show Reacher. The guy's always listening to old blues from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And there's a Blind Blake song in there. And because I'm old, I can't remember the name of it. But anyways, I knew that wasn't a standard open tuning. I knew it was some other weird kind of tuning because I was familiar with Blind Blake. And so I figured out the tuning. And I go, I got to write something with this tuning. You know, this is so out there and so cool. So really, to me, it kind of feels like Viva Las Vegas in a way. But it's not. But it has that little kind of little train,
yeah, you know,
drum thing going on. And then I actually recorded that choo-choo train in Denmark like 4 years ago. The little sample that plays in the beginning.
Yeah.
My kid to this little train park, and they have these little trains, and I just kind of recorded everything. So I had that, did that, and originally it was called the Fuck Yeah Train. and then they actually got down to business with the lyrics and vocals, and you know, nobody sings black blues better than a white British guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, damn, Phil just can do that stuff.
Yeah, and, listen to Humble Pie.
Exactly, man. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you haven't even heard it yet.
I haven't heard shit, yet. And I'm like, I feel like I have because of the colors you guys are using to paint it.
Yeah, you're gonna be into this musically. Yeah.
Like, I'll send it to you. I thought I already did, but I'll resend it to you. But
the one for me, the one that I think that Jason and I would sit in a bar and listen to is the Grinder. You know, that to me, that's the nastiest, you know, greasiest, you know, just rock song.
Yeah. I love how you described I'm Your Candyman as being pimp music. Cause that's nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Yeah. What else here? I wanted to also add, okay. So Taste It and Lucky Motherfucker, the first two singles, they're already out. And you've put videos out for those two songs. And I think if I recall, the videos are a trilogy. There's a running theme throughout them or something.
Two parts. So it's Taste It and then into Lucky Motherfucker. And it's the the guy, Mark St. Clair is the guy's name. Okay. Win a ticket to see us, you know, sound check kind of vibe by himself, and he's going nuts. And then we take him out for the day through LA and show him all the sights of LA, and it's great, man. I think the Lucky Motherfucker video is the most fun video we've ever done.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it. It's just a two-part video series. Okay. I thought there was a third installment that was going to be forthcoming.
Nobody's got that kind of budget these days.
Right. speaking of low budget, isn't that your car in the video?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Does it still have the working 8-track player?
Oh yeah, man. That thing
is nice.
Talk about pimps.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Leopard skin, you know, interior 8-track player.
Yeah,
and it's not even early 70s. It's 78, baby. It's top of the disco.
Right.
That's perfect, though, man.
Hey, before we let you go, because I know you got to get back to your other thing, and I gotta do some things as well. But to change subject, have you read this?
No,
It's Bob Daisley's autobiography. It's called For Fact's Sake. And dude, okay. I know you're a huge Randy Rhoads fan, and you're a huge fan of those first two Ozzy Osbourne records.
Yeah.
This book, dude, it's got the insight. I mean, this is so well
done. All I see is Mungo Jerry, and I'm like, sold.
Yeah, he was in Mungo Jerry.
He was in, you know, of course, Rainbow, Gary Moore. The Ozzy stuff is amazing. We had him on the show, and he was kind enough to send copies. Yeah, if you want to go back and listen to our episode with Bob Daisley.
It was out-of-body experience.
It was crazy. It was great. But I know you're
a cool guy.
Oh, super, super cool, super, super humble. And his book is amazing. He grew up like a whisker away from Led Zeppelin. Like their tour manager or their lead roadie or something was his best friend. So he was constantly getting Zeppelin stories.
And, like Richard Cole or something?
No, it wasn't Richard Cole. It was a guy named, I want to say the guy's name was Colin, but I couldn't.
Yeah, Colin. I think Colin was actually Page's tech half the time, like kind of.
Yeah, he was definitely on the inner circle, and that guy was super tight with Bob Daisley.
Wow.
And then so of course Daisley has these chance meetings with the guys in Zeppelin, and there's a story in here, I won't ruin the whole thing, but Bob came this close to joining Bad Company.
I can see that.
He was Bob Burrell got the gig. But Bob Daisley was right there in the running. It's a great book, Tracy. You would love it.
Yeah, I got to read that. I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah, it's been out for a while, and it's available on Amazon, etc. So
you know, if Bob is a myth to somebody, he should not be.
No,
people need to open up their fucking eyes and know who wrote those songs, man.
That's what I was just going to say is like, not only lyrically, but, you know, he took all of Randy's ideas and put them together.
He wrote with all three guys. It was Randy, Jakey, and Zach. And he sat in a chair next to them and wrote those fucking songs.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, he's such, what do you call it? You know, invaluable. You know what I mean? There's no price. And, you know, it's always the guys like that that kind of get pushed aside and motherfucked. And, you know, and it's just the chemistry of the world and the way humans treat each other is just pathetic, man.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast.
I could tell you, as someone who read the entire book, and we had Bob on the show, I highly recommend the book. I know you're a big fan. You would get so much out of it. So look into it. It's called For Fact's Sake.
I appreciate it. And I will.
And I'm going to see you in Texas in May. And I'm so happy that you're playing in May, because it won't quite be 112 degrees outside.
No, it should be good. I think we're playing indoors all the time now anyways.
You're playing outdoors in Austin, in Cedar Park, the same place you played last time.
The hot spot,
yeah.
They tried to get the toys on that, but...
What happened?
It didn't happen.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
We got to make that happen.
Availability, soon. Politics. I have to look at the calendar again. You know, who? Yeah, I don't know. It didn't happen.
God, that would be so
That
great.
Would have been off the chain, and you fucking know it. So,
because it's just us, right?
Yeah.
I need to make a few phone calls.
Yeah,
Tracy.
I need to figure that out.
Yeah, well,
and call Tony Soprano and it'll happen.
I mean, Dave, I don't know if you know, but you know, our manager is the Dangerous Toys.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, we're always down to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Don't say we didn't fucking try, you know.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, you know, come on.
It's the eighth wonder of the world as to why it didn't happen. So,
yeah. Well, maybe Tim can make it happen. Who knows?
We'll see. Anyway,
yeah.
Great seeing you, buddy.
Yeah. Always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for making the time today. And congratulations on the new album. The new album is called Leopard Skin. It comes out April 4th. By the time you're watching and listening to this episode, it'll be out. So go check that out. Great new stuff from Tracy and LA Guns. And I will see you in Texas in May. I always look forward to seeing you guys. You guys are still on fire live, man.
We're doing it, man.
So good. Yeah. So thanks for joining us today, man. On behalf of my co-host, Jason McMaster, I'm Metal Dave, along with our special guest today, Tracy Guns, on the Talk Louder podcast.
Thanks, guys. I love you.
Thank you, man.
I love you too, buddy.